Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Awesome product, terrific sales staff, great service department. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Comments from James Franklin's press conference last night in a few moments. First of all, our play-by-play call of the day.
And the pitch cracked a deep left field toward that wall. It is gone! Another home run. A line drive just got over the low wall down the left field line. Higashioka, the home run Stroka. And getting Higgy with it. He hits a two-run blast. How about Higgy? Two home runs and five RBIs, and the Yankees take a 14-1 lead.
All right, that was against the Orioles. So I openly asked, does it count? All right, so, but the power continues. All right, let's get to Penn State football now. James Franklin, after last night's practice, had a chance to meet with the media. He was asked right out of the gate, have you seen anything so far that has surprised you?
No, overall, I'm pleased. I knew we were fast and I knew we were athletic, but I think our execution has been really good. I thought our coaches and our players did a really good job. We had a better plan to use the 2 hours in the summer, so we were able to get ahead on the installs, and I think the guys did a good job. I think our execution has been really good. We're bigger and stronger. I'll get you guys a thing that Deej does in the weight room. It's our T score, which is basically the strongest guys based on their body weight and things like that. Our numbers are really good now that they've computed all them. I'm just pleased how we're practicing. I think our special teams have been really good. Staff's on the same page. I'm pleased with where we're at. We got to keep getting better, but I'm pleased with where we're at. The good thing is we're about to finish school. You know, we're one of these places we get very, very little time where it's football and football only. So, you know, we had two guys run off the field tonight for exams, but we'll be done here pretty soon, and then we'll get like maybe a day and a half of football without school.
James Sider was really excited about how Noah Kane finished spring camp. Have you seen him maintain that momentum coming into here? And what's Devin Ford bring to that room?
Yeah, you know, with Noah, it's kind of hard to say. I think the end of spring we felt that way. Noah's going to show up when it's live. His running style and things like that, it's breaking tackles, it's falling forward. He's the guy that's going to get 4 yards on a consistent basis. He's going to get a 12-yarder, and you're going to look down at stat sheet, he's going to have 100 yards, and it didn't feel like it, if that makes sense. Very productive, very pleased with him, his toughness, his maturity. Devin's doing some really good things. We're excited about him. He flashes. He's explosive. He's mature. He's got a mature approach. Seems to be learning well. So far, so good. But he gives us a little juice. He tested really well this summer. And, it's funny because that was probably the one thing of high school film we weren't sure about. He was unbelievably productive, but we weren't sure what his top-end speed was, and he can run. He proved that this summer in testing, and he's proved that on the field. So, and we're pleased with those guys.
If you look at the depth in that room, it's kind of an interesting debate between, do you recruit guys that kind of stash them for down the road, or do you recruit them and play everybody that you've got when you have them? How do you kind of balance?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if, in my opinion, Ben, that that's necessarily a challenge. What I would say the challenge is they're not as spread out as we would like. The reality is where we're going, we should be recruiting like that every year at every position. And guys come in and battle it out. And if guys are ready to play, they'll play. If guys aren't ready to play, they won't. It's pretty much that simple. But in my opinion, the issue is that we probably need to be, we'd like it to be in a perfect world a little bit more spread out in terms of classes.
Hey, Coach, Jim from AccuWeather, and we have a weather-related question for you because, you know, you're going back to Michigan State, right? And that was 2 years ago where you ran into that big weather event, right? You said at that time that you didn't have a page in your playbook for it. Are you mitigating against weather? Are you thinking about it in any way, shape, or form as you put together the playbook in your handbook for, you know?
I think the issue is it's not necessarily having a plan for weather. We got a plan for weather. That's an extreme situation. I think it was a 3.5-hour delay. So the issue wasn't really the weather. It was even Beaver Stadium. We just don't have a great place in our visiting locker room to hold 175 people with the travel squad and the staff and everybody, the trainers and doctors and everybody else, for 3.5 hours. So the whole conference kind of looked at that, weather plans and things like that. There's just not a great option because people just don't have these massive rooms that they're going to leave open. So obviously we learned from that. We do have a better plan moving forward. Everybody in the conference has a better plan. But I've been coaching 24 years. That's the first time that's ever happened. So hopefully it doesn't happen again. And then I hope this year, too, as you guys know, we had a bunch of rain games. So we're depending on you and all your colleagues. Because at Penn State, we just don't report the weather. We have somewhat control. So let's clean some of this stuff up.
James, where is Juice Scruggs kind of in his rehab after he had the accident and couldn't do much in spring? Is he on track to play this year? How would you say he's come along?
It's too early to say. He's progressing. As you guys know, speaking of AccuWeather, just had a lightning strike back there. But, hey, Chris, go tell those guys to get off the field, please. But you guys.
We're okay. With all the metal, we're good.
What were you talking about? I think you guys know with injuries, those are strict medical decisions. When they are ready to come back and they're healthy and they can protect themselves and they're not at risk, then they'll be back. We don't make those decisions. I think the other thing, as you can imagine, depending on the type of injury, you're going to be cautious. You're going to err on the side of caution. Yeah, you know, good. He's long, he's rangy, he's athletic. He's a details guy. I've been really impressed. You guys have heard us talk about championship habits. I see him doing little things probably earlier than I would have anticipated. Little things, the ball's on the ground, he's scooping and scoring. He's got positive energy with his teammates. And I've been impressed with him. I really have. As you guys know, the guys that have come out of Lackawanna, we've had a lot of success with him. Coach Duda does a great job. He's come in prepared. So, you know, we'll keep testing him. Obviously, getting in the stadium will help get him some more live work. That one live period we had today will help, too.
What's your plan to get in the stadium this year? More than last year, the same as last year? Where are you at on that in terms of just how long you've been here?
About the same. We'd like to try to get in the stadium. We'd like to get in there about three during the day, try to get a night game or night practice as well so they get adjusted to that. But sometimes we'll plan for it, and if it rains, we're not going to go in there and tear up the game field. But we will stay out here. We were out here the other day. It was pouring. And all the players were looking at me. The coach was looking at me like, that indoor looks nice. Why aren't we in there? But I was actually, because we don't get a whole lot of days around here where you get the rain without the thunder and lightning. So getting that rain work is important for us. So all these weather tips, this is for you.
James, what do you remember about the recruiting process with Antonio Shelton? Does it feel like it was a while ago at this point?
Yeah, it does feel like a while ago, but a couple things. Yeah, I told you. Yeah, it's coming. Yeah. We were tracking Antonio for a while. He was one of those guys more like an old school recruiting process where he had a strong senior year. If I remember, he was committed to another school in the Big Ten. Tim Banks, obviously, we hired. He had some awareness of him as well. And we were able to get involved with him late. I remember we met him and his mom at a Buffalo Wild Wings. I want to say maybe in Columbus. And things just kind of got rolling. And he's a smart guy. He's really strong. He's worked himself into a really good athlete. We're pleased with where he's at. He's about 314 pounds. He can run. We're excited about what he's going to be able to do for us this year.
James, you talked about learning about that position, specifically defensive tackle. Through a week
what do you feel like you may have known now? Has that started to clear up for you as far as what you know and what you don't know?
Yeah, I think the four deep right now we feel good about, but I think we're going to need to have seven, you know, that we you know, feel really good about. The some of the guys that we brought in are probably a lot further ahead than I thought. Hakeem Beamon has flashed. He is an explosive guy. Can get his hands inside, can play with great pad level. Our boy Darkwa, I mean, literally steps off the plane and we hand him equipment and throw him on the field, and he's been impressive. But you know, what I've tried to talk to the staff about is we can't take anything for granted with him. You can't assume anything. Like, we found out this week, he's never practiced more than 2 days in a row on a game week. You know, so just things like that. We want to be all over him to help his transition. It's hard for our guys to transition from New Jersey. You know, it's hard for our guys to transition from Florida or Oregon, like Michael's. Come from Germany, everything's different. But he seems to be handling it really well. But we want to be there every step of the way with him because we're obviously aware it's a huge transition.
You mentioned a couple of freshmen. Have any already earned a green light from you guys?
No. I mean, we've had 10 minutes of live, period. It's way too early. We don't usually do that till, you know, as late as possible. You know, and it's changed, obviously, with the four games that we're playing. I did have a discussion with them last night. I meet with all the newcomers once a week. I either have dinner with them or breakfast once a week just to see how they're doing and check on them and talk about things like that. You know, when the time comes, the red shirt process, including their parents where we can, because if we got a guy that I know will come back as a fifth-year senior and the master's degree is really important to him and his family, rather than burning his red shirt as a true freshman and maybe playing three games or I guess in the new rules, five games, I want to know that. You know, I want to know, you know, the family and the kid, their perspective on all those things. It's hard to predict 4 years down the road, but we just kind of start talking through all those processes, but we haven't, you know, even come close to we haven't had those discussions with the staff yet.
Are you gonna pick a quarterback?
James Franklin last night following practice. We'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. On News Radio 1070 WKOK. We asked the suit last night to produce a bump for us. Ah, there he is on. I mean, listen to him. Doesn't he sound good on that?
Yeah. He plays a mean guitar.
I mean, no, he's multi-talented, Bob.
He is.
Right? And, just none of the, but unfortunately, none of the talents match the jobs we have here.
No.
All right, so.
Yes. By the way, Steve, it's
Kyle, stop laughing.
It's sprinkling here in the Susquehanna Valley, and Kevin asked me, said, reminded me that my car window was a little down, and he didn't want me to have a wet seat on the ride home, so he graciously let me know. Now, he spent 10 minutes doing it. He could have just walked outside the studio and rolled it up, but he at least was kind enough to do that for me, and I appreciate it.
Okay, that would entail effort.
Yes.
All right. I need a Google map to find your car.
Steve, a couple questions on the and a comment on the James Franklin press conference. The comment is this: I think Penn State would be the only football program that a representative of AccuWeather would show up at the press conference and talk about a question about the weather. I mean, you know, the Penn State School of Meteorology is second to none, and there's a guy from AccuWeather. Nice. It's amazing.
That's great, yeah. Yeah, I've got a couple thoughts on that. You know, you can ask whatever you want.
Sure.
But, like, this is the first chance you've had to get into something like this. And I don't know.
Yeah.
Questions like that eat up valuable time. How about that?
No question. The other thing, the comment about the player from Germany, I was wanting to get a little more information from you about who this guy is and what about practicing only two times a week over there.
Well, that's what they did over there, and Joseph Darkwar is his name. To be honest with you, you watch him out there, and you know it's a... There's a process to him learning.
Sure.
But he picks up things quickly. Now, they went 4 days, then they had an off day, then they went yesterday. So they'll go again today. How's Dark Horse going to feel, though, when they get to Sunday and it's scrimmage time? That's the one you're going to... How's he going to feel and what it'll be 8 practices in 9 days by Sunday? It'll be 4 practices in a row. Now, they'll get Monday off next week, but how's he going to feel at that point? What's important about Dark Horse is this. He has time, and Beeman has time, too. They have time, because when you look at that defensive tackle spot, you have Shelton, right? Mm-hmm. You've got Windsor. You got Mustafa, who's had a great camp so far. You have Damian Barber. You've got Judge Culpepper and Fred Hansard. You already have 6 guys in that defensive tackle spot, which buys Darkwater time to really get used to how everything works. It may be all new to him right now, but there's right now, they don't have to worry about pushing him into anything except just getting better and learning how to do things the Penn State way. And then there'll be a point where he'll be ready. So time is on his side. He is not at a thin position. He's at a position right now that already has 6 guys that, to me, are established in the top 6. It just depends on what order you want to put them. But those 6 are already there. That means Darkwater can his clock can go on its own time frame.
Yep.
And doesn't have to worry so much about...
He can be on daylight savings time.
Yeah, he doesn't have to play right away.
Right, and you know...
That's the big part.
2 things. Robert Windsor is a true beast of a tackle. Oh, my goodness. And Judge Culpepper...
I thought Windsor had a really good day yesterday.
There were some games last year where he just seemed to dominate on the interior, on the defensive side. And I think Judge Culpepper may have the best name on the Penn State team this year. Just
well,
a great
his dad
name.
His dad played in the NFL. He is a guy that I think he's a perfect example about how everybody operates on their own clock. At some point, Judge Culpepper is going to be a good Penn State football player. At contributing on a lot of downs. He's going to be eventually a good player. But he's one of those guys that when he came in, you could tell right away that he would need some time to get there. And I think he's used his time well, and he's worked hard to make himself better. Now let's see if he can get himself somewhere into the rotation. Again, same story. There, you know, he's in that grouping there where I feel like at the moment, you have Shelton, Windsor, Mustafa, Barber. Okay, he doesn't have to jump in right away. And Hansard already has experience. But if Judge can help out, he's becoming more and more of an option to help out.
And we all know how important it is to have a deep rotation on the defensive front.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and Penn State, Sean Spencer, he wants fresh bodies in the fourth quarter.
Got to have them.
He wants fresh bodies in the fourth quarter, and that's big for him to have where he can turn to somebody, and there's plenty in the tank when it comes time, especially if Penn State is playing from in front and those guys have a chance to tee off. Let them tee off because they're fresh enough to do it because you played a lot of people during the game.
One of my favorite moments in Penn State football history was Tom Bali late in the fourth quarter, coming off the edge and sacking Ohio State quarterback for a fumble because he was ready to go and fresh.
Yeah, he was fresh, and he took Troy Smith, the future Heisman Trophy winner, and popped him on top of his head, and Scott Paxton recovered.
Absolutely. What one of the great moments.
That was the signature play of that game.
Yes, it was. But that was all about being fresh and rotating a few players.
Right, and that's what Penn State's always done. They've always rotated a lot of people. Larry Johnson rotated a lot of people up front. Sean Spencer rotates a lot of people up front. I'll never forget the Alamo Bowl against Texas A&M. And they're out there. Their quarterback, Stephen McGee, is out there running all night. And you can see the Penn State defensive lineman chasing him. Right, and they had to keep just bringing new people in because they chased him for 4 or 5 play. That's okay. I'm out of gas. And you can just see walking to the sideline, hands on hips, head down, like, sick of chasing this dude. And, of course, they're throwing it every down because Penn State took the running game away, and Penn State was winning the game in the fourth quarter.
Well, it's important. One other thing that was interesting on your interview with the gentleman from Cleveland.com is the coaching staff changes at Ohio State. A lot of talent left that sideline with this new coach Day.
Well, he changed everybody on defense except for Larry Johnson. It's a whole new defensive staff over there. I think Greg Madison, who at one point had been with Michigan, in fact, for a long time was with Michigan, is now the defensive coordinator there. So we'll see how it plays out. Yep. We'll see what kind of style they want to play, what he thinks of his personnel. So there's a lot more questions, I think, that about this than people realize.
A lot more.
All right. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on the show today. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have Bob Buhner alongside today.
Good to be with you, Steve.
Today, Tiger Woods shot a 75. But that is not what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, and Brooks Koepka. They're all complaining about the same thing and should be complaining about it. And that is slow play on the tour. Well, slow play has come into play in many different sports, Bob. And what really bothers me is that we have now gotten into this point where we have athletes to a fine line where we keep talking about, quote, the mental side of it. I mean, Bob, did you mentally prepare yourself, like go into a room and like do some like deep breathing exercises before you delivered a summation?
Not once.
I go in the air to do a broadcast, a show, game, whatever it may be. I just go.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why I am completely baffled by this and always have been. I've never understood, like, okay, I've got to go through my routine. Going through the routine, excuse me, I paid, go hit.
Yeah, hit the ball, would you? The question, you know, when you talk about slow play and the complaint of Tiger Woods, is that just a doggone excuse for a poor round of golf?
Totally is.
There you go, Maddie. But I just wonder about that.
No, I completely disagree with both of you.
Okay.
I totally, completely disagree with both of you on this. This is what the player gets asked about this.
Sure.
All right? Okay? And guess what? Slow play is a problem on the tour. And when you have a prominent player that gets up there, and McIlroy plays fast. So McIlroy plays fast, and McIlroy was complaining about it today. And Koepka plays at a good pace, and he complained about it today. This is not an excuse for a poor round of golf. Tiger Woods, right, no matter what you think of him, all right, there are a lot of people that don't like him, and there are a lot of people that love him, right? I've stayed neutral on him the entire time, just, you know, and take it one at a time. But you know what? When has Tiger Woods ever dodged the media?
Never.
When has Tiger Woods ever made 5,000 excuses for something? He gets up there and says, look, I didn't do this. He said today I didn't play well. That he got asked about slow play because of Koepka's comments.
Uh-huh.
And it was not an excuse for how his round played, because that's not how he has conducted himself in his career. He has not been the kind of guy that's, oh, well, because of this, I couldn't do this. But look, slow play is a problem. And what really set Koepka off at the Open Championship was playing with J.B. Holmes, right? J.B. Holmes has a routine where, okay, now it's my turn to hit. I'm going to now put my golf glove back on, okay? and then I'm going to start and going through and lining up my putt. And what? For goodness sakes, if Koepka's putting, put the glove on. Okay? Don't waste everybody's time. Stop wasting time where everybody's standing around looking around like, well, you didn't have the glove on? Okay, Nomar Garciaparra, as when he was with the Red Sox fans loved him. Every single time there was a pitch, ball, strike, foul ball, whatever it may be, get out, adjust the batting gloves. Batting gloves, what, you didn't put them on right the first time?
I know.
Seriously. All right, get out of the box. Walk around. It's part of my routine. I need to breathe here. I'll hold up, everybody. All right. Stop it with the nonsense. Okay? You're thinking too much. Get the ball. Go.
Well, now that I've heard... I didn't realize that Koepka had complained about that before, and that's how the questions goes, which exactly was what all the reporters should have asked. But I've always never been really a big Tiger fan, and he does always own up to what to if he doesn't play well. I will give him that, but sometimes they do follow excuses, but in this case, I'll give him a pass because I didn't realize that other golfers were complaining about the play.
I mean, McIlroy plays at a great pace. There are people who complain. Somebody complained about McIlroy's putting once. And they said, he gets up to the ball and he putts too fast.
Huh?
Well, what do you want him to do? Do it your way or do it his way? Last I checked, his way's won 4 major championships. Your way, you haven't even won the club championship over at Susquehanna Valley. Okay?
That's the first to be hearing that somebody play too fast.
Yeah. Do you remember that famous comedy routine? With the Honeymooners and Jackie Gleason.
Oh, yeah, address the ball.
Address the ball. Hello, ball.
Hello, Art Carney. Hello,
yes, Art Carney. And, yes, I mean, you know, Steve, it is
but this is happening in all sports. Well, everybody, I'm at the free throw line. I've got to put the ball on the floor 4 times. Big deep breath. Now I'll spin it, and now I'll shoot the ball.
my beef with basketball is when there's a foul called, the defensive team has to have a huddle to talk about something. I don't know what they're talking about, pizza, after the game, but after every foul, whether it's a shot, they all huddle up. Ban huddles when I'm king. That's one of the first rules I'm having when I take over the world. But all those little things that go on through a game that waste 5 seconds here, 10 seconds there, drives me crazy.
Well, there's an article in USA Today dealing with smaller baseball parks and declining attendance. Baseball attendance in 2018 went down 4%. They think there's a good chance it may be near that neighborhood again this year. Now, some places are doing really well. I mean, Los Angeles is doing great. Mm-hmm. St. Louis always does great. But they're worried about that. And baseball's done something smart. They talked about smaller ballparks. How Texas, for example, is going to go from 49,000 seats, and in the new ballpark, it's going to be 40. How in Cleveland, they've reduced it to 34,000 in their current park. And that's fine. That's why the percentage of seats taken is higher now.
Yeah.
Three Rivers Stadium. Because there are fewer seats.
Yeah. No, Three Rivers Stadium for the Pirates was like 58,000, and for the Pirates now at PNC Park, 38,000. So, yeah, it makes for a more intimate setting, but I think there's a lot of criticism of the slow play of baseball. So,
the one sport that doesn't have...
There should be, because look, what makes basketball go? The ball's always in play.
Yes.
Hockey, the puck's always in play. Let's take soccer. Soccer, there is not a lot of scoring, okay? Final may be 1-0, 2-1. But guess what the ball's doing the entire 90 minutes?
It's rolling.
It's moving. Right? Football, yeah, it may be in bursts, but the replays are so good in football, it makes you feel like there's constant action. So there's a perception there. I think that for baseball, the biggest criticism I have of the analytics world is very simple. When you tell me the strikeout is like any other out, that means you flat out don't get the game. Yes. Is the strikeout like any other out? Let's see. The strikeout's like any other out, except if I put the ball in play and you throw me out, the guy at short may bobble it. The guy at first may drop it. The throw may be wild, right? The guy may run down the line and beat it out, right? Or you then take, on a ground out to second, you may take a runner and move it to third. Oh, and on a wild pitch, he scores. Now, you're going to tell me the strikeout is like any other out? I just grounded out to second for the second out of the inning, and the runner who's on second just moved to third, and I made an out. But then he uncorked a wild pitch or a pass ball after that, and he scored. So you're telling me that my ground out to second was like a strikeout. I mean, you have to be a complete idiot to say stuff like that. And I do, and sorry, analytics people, guess what? When it comes to that, you say something like that, my respect for you goes out the window. It means you do not know the game of baseball. The two most important offensive stats are runs scored and RBIs. It's scoring. Scoring wins games. Okay? If it's nothing, nothing, everybody has to keep staying there.
That's right.
Couldn't have said it any better. And this is also the other problem with analytics, too, Steve, with baseball, is you look at a couple things that Gabe Kapler has done this year for the Phillies. I'm not saying that what the Phillies season is all his fault. It's not, he gets a good portion of the blame, but it's not all of his fault. Is managers then now overthink. And this is not just in baseball. This is in other leagues, too, that use analytics. The numbers that they look at, they make them overthink instead of just going by the eye test and what they see as the game flows, which makes the in-game management atrocious sometimes for either a baseball manager or an NFL coach or whoever's using the analytics. That's my problem with it nowadays.
I mean, first of all, do I think analytics are valuable? Let's establish this right, just so everyone understands. Yes, analytics are extremely valuable. I, in any job I'm doing, want to have every tool possible. So, in other words, when I'm sitting there to get ready for a game, guys, will I look at Ken Pomeroy's analytics stats before I do a game? Yes, because there may be something in there that I think, you know what, that's a number that could be important tonight in the winning or losing of the game. You know, do they maintain that number or do they not get there? Okay, will I look at Pro Football Focus and some of their grades on certain positions on the field? Yes, I will. Right, so I'm using analytics in my job. But I don't base my job on analytics. See, that's the big difference. Once the game starts, it's my instinct as to how I call the game. All right? And to me, for managers and coaches out there, analytics are an incredibly valuable tool. And I'll tell you where they're the most valuable. It's the most valuable when you're talking to a player and they think they're doing really well at something, and you're telling them they're not, and they're arguing with you, and you say, and you hold up the piece of paper that says, no, we've got it all charted out here as to what you've done. Okay, you're not doing as well as you think. It actually is an important backup tool. But in the end, there, you know, what makes Belichick great? Belichick's great because, sure, he's got Ernie, the heck's his name? He's had him for a long time. He's been his analytics guy forever. And sure, he uses him, okay? But guess what? When the game starts, Belichick coaches the game. He doesn't sit there and go, Ernie says here on third down, we need a blitz. He doesn't do that. I mean, he then takes what he goes with, and goes from there. Same thing with any good coach worth their salt. Do you think Mike Krzyzewski's out there saying, oh, geez, you know, the analytics say we ought to... No, they use it as a tool.
Yeah,
and that's why he still wins.
Right, and they use it as a tool. For example, I'll give you a good area where analytics can help a basketball coach. They can give you as to what combination works the best on the floor. So now it dictates how you want to put your personnel on the floor at certain times. But guess what? With 5 minutes to go, after all night long, who are the five players you trust the most to win? Analytics isn't going to tell you that. Only the game will tell you that.
You know,
only the game tells you that.
We go in sort of the pendulum swinging different ways. It used to be a manager would just say, and fans would applaud, I just go with my gut. My gut feeling about whatever it is, and playing, bunting, hit and run, etc. It's just a gut feeling. And now we've swung the opposite way, where we look at some chart somebody with a calculator and a computer has put together, and it tells the coach what he should do. It's almost, why play the game? Just use analytics and make it a computer game, as opposed to a combination of analytics and going with your instincts, your training, your experience. So,
let's say football for a moment.
Sure.
Football practice is so important to what you do. I mean, Matt, you went to Bucknell's practices this week. Practice and the repetition of it, correcting. In other words, if you make a major mistake in practice today, guess what? You can correct it. That's why you practice. That's where all the thinking is done. That way, when you know, it's not fatal to make a major mistake in practice on a Tuesday. It is if it's not corrected by Saturday. So that's what you do. And there are certain coaches or managers that I've watched over the years that I felt had no gut instinct and desperately needed analytics to help them, right? Then there are people, then the best ones are always the ones that do manage by their gut, right? And look, part of that is making sure that you have all the tools around you to help make a decision during the week, the morning of the game. You don't live and die by it. You can't. Okay, sports is not dealt with a formula. Okay, we're going to go six innings with Nolan. Now we're going to go to seventh inning, eighth inning. No. Okay, you look out there. If Nolan looks strong, fresh, and they can't touch him, you give him the seventh inning. All right? You don't go by the formula. And if he looks strong or whatever, he's throwing 80-something pitches, and guess what? They can't touch him. You pitch him in the eighth inning. All right? Every game takes on its own personality, and analytics doesn't take that into account. It's all by formula. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. I mean, Bob, when it comes to the summation, you probably just went out and, you know, you were well prepared, had it well thought out, delivered your summation, you went from there. Yeah. I go and do a game and the whole thing. Then you got some people that, like, just to do the open of a game, like, are obsessed with it so much that it takes them 5 days, right? And it only lasts 90 seconds, and they forget the game's 3 hours.
And speaking of that, the first high school football game on WKOK, Shikomi Braves.
Weeks.
Paddling up the Susquehanna River to Danville to take on the Ironmen, and I think a guy named The Coach will be there along with, what's his name?
No, it's going to be Dave Ritchie.
Oh, the Chief, not The Coach.
The Chief.
The Coach has retired.
Oh, the Chief. Yep. He is a great, great guy, The Chief. Yeah. So, wow, that'll be something. We'll actually have some real help in the old press box for Kevin. But I think 2 weeks and a day till that all starts. And tonight, Phillies at San Francisco, Eagles hosting the Titans, all on Sunbury Broadcasting.
Yeah. Eagles will be in action against the Tennessee Titans on Eagle 107 with Marilyn Mike and Scott Fransky and company out in San Francisco on WKOK as the Phillies look to rebound after losing back-to-back games in Arizona. They'll look to rebound against the Giants. And Madison Bumgarner tonight.
Yeah, that's a rebound. Holy cow. That's putting your head into the mouth of the tiger when you go out there at home with Bumgarner.
Although he hasn't pitched that well lately. He's given up 12 runs, I think, in the last three games, something like that.
He's waiting.
He's obviously a bum.
He's waiting for the Phillies to show up in the Bay.
I wouldn't be surprised.
So, and then, Steve, we only have 23 more days till we hear you do the pregame from the Bryce Jordan Center with Jack Hamm and Derek Williams, and that's not a lot of time. 23 days.
Yeah. Except, by the way, Aaron Nola gets the ball for the Phillies tonight. Not a long time. No offense, but it feels like it's dragging right now.
Well, it's the anticipation building up among Nittany Nation, and
But see, I'm already ready for the game. This is not like I'm already, my stuff is mostly done. I'm going to watch some Idaho tape here, but I'm not going to do that until I get to the Sunday before the game.
Sure.
Just look at the couple games from last year, just to get a feel for them.
Sure.
But I just, it's now we're at the point. It's like 23 days. You're like, all right, let's go. Let's make this thing move.
Yeah.
I'm with you there.
Yeah, let's go. I mean, see, Maddie's excited. I mean, he's going to be the new voice of Shikellamy football here soon. Yeah.
I actually have week one on my plate. I'm doing Midwest and Marion Catholic for SECVA week one of high school season.
Maddie's branching over to the video side of things with SETV.
This will be my third season.
We better open up a spot before it gets too big for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Matt's going to be on the sideline for the opening of Bucknell football against Temple.
Life dream come true, being on the sidelines at Lincoln Financial Field. So I'm looking forward to that
very much. The Bison played Temple, and of course, I put in a call to Sandy Barber asking her if they could put Bucknell on the Penn State football schedule for the game one. Sandy has not gotten back to me yet, but I'm sure she will. Maybe not.
Sure.
Yep.
I can guarantee you one thing. There won't be a return game.
No. There will not be a return game in that series.
That I can guarantee you.
If it's a one game and done, can it be called a series?
No, it can't. I'll say this. It was really neat, though, in basketball to go to Soika and do a game there a few years ago on that Friday afternoon.
Yeah, we were there with you, Steve, and Dick Girardi.
Bucknell played well. Penn State won the game. I would say Penn State won the game by 10 or something like that. They had DJ Newbill, and walked in there and won.
They brought a team.
Well, I remember I was kidding. I tell this story. I was kidding with Doug. And before the game, Dwayne Anderson, the assistant coach for Penn State, comes out to warm guys up. Well, he was the only one out there, and he's just shooting the ball. And I said to Doug, I said, that's Penn State's best player. He says, really? Who is he? I said, Dwayne Anderson, 2009 Villanova Final Four, assistant coach.